Hello, and welcome to The Exploding Typewriter, Pulp Writers on Writing Pulp. I'm your host, Perry Constantine, and we got another guest who's returning for a second appearance. He couldn't get enough of his time the first time around, and so we got him back again, and that is Barry Reese. Barry, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm thrilled to be back again.
We're glad to have you back, and today we are going to be talking about something that's a very important issue to me, and I know it's something you care a lot about as well, and that is writing female characters. And writing female characters in pulp is kind of a double-edged sword, because they generally, female characters in action-adventure fiction haven't always gotten a fair shake, and that's kind of putting it generously. So when we're talking about female characters, Barry, what's your thought on female characters in pulp fiction?
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, historically, the female characters in pulp tended to either be the hero's girlfriend or the femme fatale. Mm. They could be classified into those two very broad groups. They were either there, for a little bit of romance for the hero and to be somebody that he has to rescue, or else they were so seductive that, you know, their sexuality was really the dominant part of their personality. So they're either the Dragon Lady or, you know, Polly Pureheart. And there weren't many shades of gray with them. And obviously, you know, we've come a long way since then. And I do think there are some classic pulp writers who were pretty good at handling female characters. I mean, Paul Ernst in the Avenger series had some very strong female characters. Nellie Gray in particular was wonderful. And, you know, Walter Gibson did a pretty decent job. He tended to avoid too many female characters. But, you know, you had Myra Reldon. And even the later versions of Margot Lane were pretty strong. Mm-hmm. But what you got a lot was, even in something like Doc Savage, where you have Pat Savage, who's a wonderful, strong character, but even then, you could kind of sense that the editors and Lester Dent were bending over backwards to remind you that hey, she's still a girl. You know, she owns a salon. You know, she's still kind of concerned about her hair. You know, you have Doc constantly saying, you know, this is too dangerous for you, Pat. And this kind of stuff, and wanting her to stay behind. So it's like, even there, you know, when you have somebody who should be a really kick-ass female character, and who I think people, you know, have embraced because of that, still it's tempered by the fact of, well, you know, she's still a girl, you know. And so I think with modern pulp adventure, it is important to give female characters a more equal footing. And I think that, I mean, you know, you look at the real world and there's so many heroic women and mm-hmm. strong women that there's no reason why these fictional universes that we create shouldn't be populated by just as many.
Right, right. I agree with that. You and I are both kind of renowned, you probably more so than me because your work gets a little bit more press than I do, for writing female characters. When you're approaching a female character, like, what is your mindset when you're going towards them, when you start to sit down to write them?
It's kind of an odd question, just in that, no, I don't mean the question is odd, but it's difficult to answer, because generally when I create a character, they just kind of, they are either female or male just when I create them. Mm-hmm. I don't usually set out to create a particular gender. And when I've established that, for instance, all right, with Gravedigger, that's one of my female characters. It's easier for me to answer if I'm answering something very specific. I had created the Rook and Lazarus Gray, and they were two very prominent characters in the same universe. And I did, in that case, want to create a female character, because I wanted a third character to kind of have this kind of Trinity thing going. And obviously, if I have two males, it made sense to have a female character, just to make them different, so I didn't have a third guy. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I said, all right, I'm going to have a female character. And then I started thinking about how to make her different from the other two characters, personality and character-wise and things she would do. But I never sat down and included her gender as a personality trait. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes writers fall prey to that. When I give writing talks, I get asked fairly frequently, how do you write female characters? And I tell them the same way you write any character. Because there are so many different variations of women in the world that no matter what kind of female character I give you, you can't tell me that's not like a female character would be. I know women who, you know, pass gas and burp in public. I know women who love professional wrestling. I know women who love to go shopping and wear pink all the time. Mm-hmm. I know women who don't believe that other women should wear slacks. Mm-hmm. I know women who love hardcore pornography. I know women who love comic books. I know women who are turned off by all those things. There are as many different variations of women as there are of men. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever asks me, how do you write a male character?
Right.
And it's the same thing. You know, when I'm writing a female character, I think of them as a person. Now, there are some things, you know, you can say women in general may be more empathetic, or women in general may be more, you know, maternal, for instance. They may have more reactions to a crying baby, that kind of thing. But that's not always true. Mm-hmm. You can't apply that to woman in general with a capital W. And so I never really worry about that too much. I try and focus on who is this person? What are they like? How do they react to things? And then, you know, the fact that they're a woman is secondary to that. You think of them as a person first and as a character. Charity, who is a gravedigger, I can tell you all kinds of things about what she's like and who she is. And very few of them really have anything to do with her gender. They're just who she is.
You've created a good number of them, some of whom have had starring roles in your books. I believe it's, let's run down the list. There's Guanyin.
Yes.
There's my personal favorite, Fiona Chapman. From Rabbit Heart, and there's Charity Grace from Gravedigger, and now there's one that you didn't create, but you have a book out, and that's Liberty Girl.
And Cambridge from The Damned Thing.
Okay, thank you. I knew I was forgetting someone else in there. So what's your approach to each of these characters? Talk a little bit about how you approached each of them.
Yeah, you know, and for a while there, what I was doing is I would do a Rook book. And then I would do a one-off thing that was different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and those tended to be a lot of my female character books. Just because, you know, I'd been writing this guy for a while, and I was like, well, now I'll write somebody different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with each character, I mean, I'm cognizant of the fact that they are women and when the story is set, because you can't ignore that. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in the Guanyin book, I mean, she's a pirate running around in, you know, the 1600s. Obviously, whenever anybody meets her, there's going to be a reaction to her because of the fact that she is a woman. Mm-hmm. Likewise, you know, with Violet Cambridge, she's a private eye in the late 1930s, which is somewhat of an unusual vocation for a woman at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, again, you know, you can't ignore the fact that the way society views them is very much gender dependent. But in terms of the characters themselves, you know, again, I always really thought of them as people first. And I found what's the core and the nugget, for instance, of Violet. I mean, she's tough as nails. She's a hard ass. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to really delve into that kind of character without, you know, focusing too much on the gender side of things. And really that's the case with all of my female characters. With Fiona, I played very much with the notion of sexuality because of the nature of that story. That story deals a lot with archetypes taking on physical form. And her archetype is a very modern one, which is basically, you know, the kick-ass heroine with a sword. Because there's this kind of female archetype that's developed in, you know, films like Resident Evil and Underworld and all of these different things where you have this hot chick usually dressed in leather or some tight clothing. Mm. She's carrying something that she can stab people with. I don't know if there's some sort of phallic symbolism that's supposed to be there. And so you have this kind of character that they look different, but the archetype is the same from story to story. Once you recognize it, I was like, well, you know, it would be fun to kind of really address that head on. And that's what I did with Fiona. And, you know, I don't know if I'm really answering your question or not.
No, you're doing fine. Cause this is what I wanted you to do, is talk about how you approached each one, and you're doing a good job of that. So yeah, keep going. Talk a little bit about, Gravedigger.
Well, you know, with Gravedigger, like I said, I wanted her to be, somewhat different from Lazarus and the Rook. And so I wanted somebody who, both of those characters had come from privileged backgrounds. And so I wanted to have a character who came from the streets. In fact, she's the half-sister of Samantha Grace, who's from my Lazarus Grace series. And so if things had gone very differently, she would have been the one growing up in a life of privilege. But instead, she grew up on the streets, and she had to steal to survive. And she had to do a lot of things that made her a much darker and grittier and more cynical character. And I wanted to kind of play with that. And again, even then, I couldn't totally get away from the fact that she is a woman. I did play with the fact that the Gravediggers, that's a title given to warriors and servants of the Voice. They go back for centuries. Well, she's the first female, one of them. And so even there, you know, there's the way that society and other people view her because of her gender. But in almost every case, all of my female characters are, they acknowledge that. And then they say, even if they don't come out and say it, story-wise, they basically say, look, if you've got a problem with me being a woman, that's your problem. Yeah, I've got stuff to do.
Right, you know? Right.
And then they move forward. Guan Yin's on a quest to find her dad. Charity's got 3 years to redeem her soul. You know, Violet is looking for the person who killed her husband. All of these characters, they have their own stories. And if you're hung up on the fact that they're a woman, they don't have time for that. You know, most of them have a schedule, and they've got to keep to it.
What do you think is the biggest thing that trips up a lot of writers, a lot of male writers, when they approach female characters? Because you see this a lot when you've got male writers writing female characters in action adventure stories. You know, you see it in comic books, you see it in movies, you see it in TV shows, you see it in novels, where they fall right into that stereotype of it's usually you know, a pretty typical stereotype. It's a badass chick who looks good in skimpy clothing, and is very sexualized. But there's not really much else to them beyond that.
Well, I think part of it is a maturity issue. And I'm not saying necessarily that they're young writers. Sometimes you can be a 60-year-old person still very immature.
Yeah.
Their concept of women, their concept of a female character, is still so wrapped up in sex that it's difficult for them to separate it. When they think of a cool female character, the way she dresses, the way she is treated as a sex object, is part and parcel of what a cool female character is. And I think you have to eventually reach the point of emotional maturity where you're able to separate the sexy girl from necessarily being a character. There's no reason why your female character can't be sexy. There's no reason why you can't have a female character who is all those things. But yeah, a lot of writers, they get so hung up on that. And if you're emotionally immature, then it's difficult to move past that. The other thing is that some writers, I think, are very much afraid of writing female characters because they don't want to offend anyone. They want to do it right, but they get so hung up and nervous about it that they end up doing almost as much of a disservice, which is where you write such a strong female character that you're hitting them over the reader over the head with the fact of, oh, look, my female character is tough. She becomes almost superwoman because you're so afraid of portraying her in any kind of weak fashion that you portray her as basically a guy with breasts.
Right.
You get so standoffish, or, you know, you say, oh, yeah, she's so tough that, you know, she's smoking a cigar and holding a big rifle and, you know, rawr. and that, again, that's fine. But I think some, you know, I had a young man ask me one time, and I go back a lot because I do a lot of writing talks and things. I had a young man ask me, he said, you know, that he had a lot of trouble writing female characters. He said he just didn't understand them. And I said, well, you know, women are a mystery. I said, but really, if you think about it, I said, you know, a lot of dudes are a mystery too.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, you know, if you're really stuck, I said, you know, look at your sister, look at your mom, look at girl friends that you have. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, think about what they would do in these different situations. Think how they would react to things. I told him, I said, and you know, and he said that, you know, he never thought of his, you know, of looking at his mom in that way. And I said, well, I understand, you know, you're wrapped up in your head. She's mom. But I said, she wasn't always mom. At one time, she was somebody's girlfriend. At one time, she was somebody's best friend. Mm. She still is those things, you know? She's more than just your mom. And I said, you know, once you can get to the point where you can separate the roles that we put women into from their identities as people, then you can start to have good female characters. You know, I even if I have a female character who is the girlfriend of the hero, I never try to, that's not how they are in my head. Mm-hmm. Evelyn, who is the Rook's girlfriend and eventually marries him and becomes the mother to his kids, she's his partner. Even if she's not going out there and shooting the bad guys with him, she's his partner in life. She is just as essential to what he does as anybody who puts on a domino mask. More so, I would say, because she's the one who lifts him up, who gives him strength. She's the one that he opens up to, you know, and I think that you've got to treat them as individuals and as people before you ever peg them with a role. And I see this problem with males and females in all kinds of fiction. You know, I do watch The Walking Dead show, and my wife and I were talking about a character on that show by the name of Glenn. And in the first season, Glenn was pretty cool. He was the, you know, he was the little small guy who they would send out on little, you know, reconnaissance missions, and he would sneak into places and steal things for them and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And what he has become since he's been involved with this other character named Maggie, his character is now he's the guy who's in love with Maggie. And people do that a lot with female characters, but they also do it with male characters. And you've got to watch out for that. To me, that character of Glenn is now nowhere near as interesting as he was. And it you know, it happens again and again. Even Han Solo before he's officially with Leia is a very different character from Han Solo after he's with Leia.
Oh, don't even get me started.
And I mean, you know, if you read all the expanded universe novels, I mean, at some point, you know, I just realized, you know what, I don't enjoy reading about Han Solo anymore.
Well, even before that, like, and I haven't read any of the expanded universe stuff, but, you know, when you're talking about Return of the Jedi, you know, he's getting all jealous boyfriend on Leia, and I'm just sitting there watching it. I'm just like, this feels very un-Han-like. You know, he's supposed to be this, like, cool character,
yeah,
you know, who's not really affected by a lot of stuff, and now you've got him being like overly paranoid.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand being in a relationship does change people.
Right.
But I think that, you know, you've got to have a clear idea of what that character is and who they are. And if that character can't stay pure to the basest level of who that character is, then either you have a problem with the storyline you're putting them into, or you are losing sight of who that character was. I think you can write a Han Solo who's in a relationship, who's still the cool Han Solo.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, I think that cool Han Solo would be held to be in a relationship. But that's, you know, that would make for some interesting stories.
Right, right.
And I think too often we think of female characters in particular as the wife, as the mother, as the girlfriend. And even like how I just described Evelyn, you know, even though she's important to him and she's the one he opens up to, I'm very careful to never make her character suddenly be the emotional rock, okay? Because then you're being unfair to that character. You're putting her on a pedestal of somebody who is always understanding. And that, you know, that's not true. I try to be a good person. I'm not always understanding. My wife's not always understanding. Everybody has moments where they're not understanding. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a story that that I've never finished, that I've been working on for the Rook for a while, where the Rook is away when Evelyn's father has a heart attack and dies. And she has no way of getting in touch with him. And so he's gone for this whole period, and she's by herself dealing with this. And when he comes back, she's pissed. She knows he was out saving the world or whatever, but she can't help but feel that she was alone at this moment. And, you know, that other people's husbands would have been there. And that wasn't to make her look like a shrew. That's the way people would feel.
Absolutely.
There's all kinds of things that happen every day, whether you're a male or a female, that your rational mind says, well, I shouldn't be upset about that. But you're still pissed off. You know, you can't help it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, and everything I'm saying now, you know, I keep going back to whether you're a male or a female, and that's the key. Don't think of your female characters as this separate entity, this other race that's out there. You know, she's not, despite what the book says, she's not literally from Venus, you know. She's from Earth. She's a human being. My wife grew up watching the same Saturday morning cartoons I did. Mm-hmm. You know, she grew up loving the same kinds of fiction that I did. Now, we're different people, so we react to things differently. Mm-hmm. And yes, there may be some things that as a man I have, through society, been conditioned to react to differently or to be more oblivious to. But that doesn't mean that that's the way every guy is or she's the way every girl is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what I was trying to get across to that young man who asked me. I said, think of 10 different girls, 10 different females that you know, and think about how alike and different they are in so many different ways. You know, your characters should be just as varied. If you realize you're writing the same female character over and over again, deliberately mix it up.
And you make some really good points there about, you know, not differentiating them from male characters and just treating them as characters first. But one of the problems that you can run into, especially when you're a man writing about female characters, is, you know, the women in refrigerators thing. So when it comes to challenging your female characters, when it comes to putting them in dangerous situations, where do you find that line between like what's acceptable and what's not acceptable that doesn't come off as being vaguely misogynist or explicitly misogynist?
Before I answer that, let me say this. I have not always been as enlightened about this as I like to think I am now. Mm-hmm. When I was a young man, when I was writing in college and even into my 20s, I frequently did the thing where I would kill off the hero's girlfriend to give him motivation. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I thought that was really cool. Because I had read stories where that happened that were really cool. And, you know, it eventually I grew up, you know. So, I mean, if you're in high school and you're doing those kind of things, then I think that, you know, it's not like I'm saying you're a bad person or you're a bad writer. But, you know, eventually, hopefully you'll realize I don't have to do that.
Exactly.
And so in terms of how I treat my female characters in terms of putting them in danger and in things like that, I have done stories where Evelyn, for instance, in the Rook series was held hostage, but I've also done stories where their kids were held hostage. I've also done stories where the Rook's best friend was kidnapped. I've also done stories where anybody in his life is a target. And I think that if you treat the characters with respect, then your readers will read it, even if their first Rook story they ever read is one where Evelyn is being held hostage and the Rook has to go save her. I think if I'm doing my job right, I write that story in such a way that people don't think, oh, he's just doing this to be exploited. Because it's all in how you write her reactions. And I think the thing that happens all too often is that the character that is put in the fridge, so to speak, either beforehand or at that moment, they cease to be a character, a plot device. And people can really see that. Because if you're only focusing on how your hero is responding, if everything is about how does Max feel about Evelyn being in danger? How does Max react to it? Then yes, she's a plot device.
Right.
But if I'm going back and I'm showing Evelyn in that situation, and Evelyn is, you know, coming up with ways to try and make her own situation better, then I think that I can get across to you the fact that, yes, she's the one captured right now, but that doesn't mean that she's weak. And I try to do that with all my work. I mean, you know, I did a thing called Rabbit Heart, which was very, very full of sex and full of violence. And I would think if anybody was ever going to look at my work and claim misogyny, that might be the one that on the surface would look that way. But I think anybody who read it, and really read it, I hope that I gave enough depth to the main character, Fiona Chapman, that people wouldn't think that I was being exploited. Because there are characters in that story, there are girls who are absolute basket cases. Mm-hmm. There are boys in that story that are all absolute basket cases. There are girls in that story who are, you know, horrible people. There are boys in that story that are horrible people. And I think I was pretty damn fair.
Definitely. Like, I'm one of the first people to criticize when something veers into misogynist territory. But Rabbit Heart, I've gone on record many times as saying it's my favorite book, my favorite thing you've ever written. And it's, you know, you never get, like, you can see how that can may be like that on the surface if you're just reading the back cover.
Right.
But when you're reading the book, you're right. It's not like that at all, because it's a dark world. It is a very, very dark world filled with lots of sex and lots of violence and lots of bad things happening to lots of people. But the bad things aren't only happening to women. And you do a good job of, even when you use these types of archetypes, you flip them on their head in some ways. You play around with the whole idea of the archetypes. That's the entire purpose of the book.
Yeah, and you know, and look, when I'm writing it, I'm not unaware of the misogyny issue. I mean, when I'm putting a female character in harm's way, I can't sit here and say it never crosses my mind of, you know, am I going too far or not? Mm-hmm. You know, and I always try to tell myself, though, one, am I treating the violence against women differently than I would treat the violence against a man in the same scene? If I have a bad guy and he's kidnapped someone and he's going to stab them through the heart and kill them. All right. If it was a male character and I would have written that scene as, you know, he says, you know, now you're going to die, and he stabs him through the heart and that's that. And then I write that female character in the same scene and I make sure to have her blouse ripped and I describe the dusky color of her nipples. And then I have him stab her through the heart. There's something wrong.
Right.
Because I wrote that scene titillating. And, it, you know, look, if you're going to be titillating with your violence, be titillating with everybody.
Right.
You know, you can do it with a male character, too. I try never to do that. I'm not saying that I've never written a scene like that. Because, I mean, sometimes the muse takes you places and you don't even realize how it could have been interpreted until afterwards, when you're like, you know what, I probably could have written that scene better. But one thing I think that the misogyny thing comes up a lot is, even when I read works by people I really like Ian Fleming, he will describe a male character's face and how they're dressed. But then when the female character comes in, he'll describe her face, how she's dressed, and he'll make special mention of the pertness of her breasts or the curve of her hips and things like that.
A class I took last semester, I analyzed two of Fleming's books, and I looked at – it was a linguistics paper, and I looked at the language he uses for different characters, mm-hmm. and particularly with the language he uses to describe female characters and male characters.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it when I was reading the books, but when I sat down and I really looked at it, it is so blatant.
It is. And, you know, it's – and I understand, you know – why he probably knew he was writing to a predominantly male audience,
mm-hmm.
and he knew that probably 90% of the males reading it, if not more, were heterosexual males. You know, and so, you know, hey, I love a beautiful woman,
mm-hmm.
But I try and make a conscious effort, even something little. Like, I noticed at one point during my writing that I had a tendency to describe what women were wearing, whereas with men, I didn't usually do that. With men, I would say something like, oh, you know, he had a very stern face. Whereas when Samantha Grace would come in the scene, I would tell you she was wearing a skirt and heels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't go on in depth about, you know, how hot she looked in. But the mere fact that I did that, I realized, I was like, why am I doing that? Why is it important to me to let you know what she's wearing when I'm not doing that with the male characters? And so rather than stop doing that with her, I made it a point to more often describe what the guys were wearing. Is he in a finely tailored suit? Or is he, you know, wearing something that looks threadbare? You know, you can use clothes to establish character trait. And I realized that for some reason I was doing that predominantly with women. And that's something I think as a writer you should, and not just for the aspect of writing gender, but anytime you notice that you have a habit, you know, be aware of it. And, you know, maybe start learning from that, you know. And in this case, I think actually it's aided me in my descriptions of male characters. I didn't look at it as immediate negative and go, oh, wow, I should stop describing what anybody's wearing. I was like, well, why don't I do that with the male guys too, you know? And I think that as you're writing it, just don't break your female characters down into body parts. And again, I think some of that comes with maturity. I mean, when I was younger, if I was writing a character, a female character, and she was a stacked character, you know, I would have mentioned it. And look, I'm not saying you should never do that. For instance, Power Girl in the comics, it has become, you know, part of her character, her physique. Right. Some people overdo it, but then you have somebody like Amanda Connor, who is a female creator who did wonderful work on Power Girl. And I saw a great quote from her one time, and somebody asked her, you know, did she feel weird working on, you know, Power Girl because her breast size is such an issue with that character. And Amanda Connor said, she says, look, she says, women don't mind characters with big boobs because a lot of women have big boobs.
Yeah.
She says what they don't like is when they're treated as just the boobs. Mm-hmm. The boobs aren't even treated as, you know, actual physical parts, you know. I mean, actual breasts have weight, which is something that a lot of comic book artists have. And, you know, I mean, I think women – I've never met a woman who had any problem with having a sexy female character, but a woman can recognize right away, and guys can too, when a character is being, I'm thinking, I'm missing the word right now, is being, help me out here, Perry. It's
unrealistic?
Objectified.
Objectified.
That's what I was looking for. Thank you. you know, I mean, I know strong feminist women who love Red Sonja.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like my girlfriend and I, when we went to see the Avengers, she loved Black Widow.
Yes.
She loved her in Iron Man 2. She loved her in the Avengers. And she loved how sexy she was. That was one of the things that she really liked about the character. But the character wasn't only about that. And I think that's something else she would have picked up on.
Exactly. And because, you know, I've written a few things in my blog about this. When people say, you know, do you ever objectify your female characters? Well, of course I do. But I objectify the male ones too. You know, I write adventure fiction. So the majority of my starring characters, whether they're male or female, they are beautiful people. They're sexy. And there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody in this world likes sexy people. Now, what's sexy to me and what's sexy to you might be different.
Right.
But we all like sexy people. Because, you know, without sex, the human race would have died out a long time ago. There's something inside us that likes sexy people. And even if you're a straight man, I mean, you don't watch James Bond. Even if you're not comfortable enough to admit it, you like having a sexy James Bond. Because a sexy James Bond gets sexy James Bond girls. You know? Everybody wants to identify with the hero. We want the hero to be better than us. And sometimes that means physically. There's nothing wrong with that. But you just can't ever go to the point where that's the defining characteristic.
Absolutely.
And that's why I sometimes have trouble with like a character like Domino Lady. I've written Domino Lady, and I think that, you know, her whole sex is a weapon thing, I understand it. I can get behind it. But some of the marketing for her books, though, I find, even as a guy, to be offensive. There is a book Moonstone published, and I hate throwing Moonstone under the bus here because I've written for them, and I'd like to continue. But they did a book called Domino Lady Three-Way, where she teamed up with these two other female characters.
That's pushing the innuendo envelope a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I'm okay with innuendo, and sometimes it's funny and humorous and stuff. But when it's pervasive, when every Moonstone Domino Lady book has her, you know, half naked, and titles like "Sex is a Weapon" and "Three Way" and, you know, "Domino Lady Strips," whatever. You know, at some point, you know, it almost makes me think, you know, do you not take that character seriously?
Right.
You know, I have a big problem with female characters running around in high heels fighting crime. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, you know, they shouldn't be allowed the freedom to wear high heels and be sexy. But who the hell is going to go fighting crime in high heels? You break your ankle and die.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, have some common sense. And that's one reason why when I sat down with George Sellis, my artist on the Gravedigger cover, and we were talking about what I wanted her to look like. I said right away, I said, I want her, she's sexy, but I want her covered from head to toe. Because this is somebody who's going out to kill people. And she's going out knowing she could get killed. It makes no sense for her to be running around in her panties in a tube top with high heels. She's wearing a functional outfit. And, you know, if you have a good artist and you're a good writer, you can make her sexy in a full coverage outfit.
Oh, yeah. And that cover is, you know, that's wonderful. I spotlighted it. We did an episode with Ron Fortier about pulp covers. And I mentioned that one is one of my favorite pulp covers.
Yeah, it's my favorite cover that I think's ever been on one of my books.
And not only that, but he managed to make her sexy, not only being fully covered, but having her face fully covered as well.
Yes.
And it's a remarkable cover. And you did a wonderful job, you know, doing that and still showing, conveying the type of character she is while still maintaining her femininity.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's a wonderful artist, and he did it perfectly, like you said. And you know, I mean, I just think that when you approach your female characters, yeah, I mean, dude, I do sometimes, you know, when I was creating Gravedigger, I was thinking, you know, am I going to be embarrassed to share this character? You know, when I post on Facebook, hey, my new book is out, you know, am I going to be embarrassed by that character? Because, you know, if you're writing erotic fiction, then do whatever you want to, you know, but you're probably not going to be posting that on Facebook that your new book's out, you know?
At least not under your same name.
Exactly. And so even the Rabbit Heart cover, which is a kind of sexy cover, but not, I don't think, overly so. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, see that cover. I've had a lot of women look at that cover and go, wow, I love that cover.
Well, it's got kind of a cheesecake element to it with her, with the expression on her face and everything.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful cover.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you see the cover, I think it might engender a certain response in you that hopefully when you start reading it, you're like, oh, okay, this isn't where I was going to go, which is part of the point, is that what you're seeing on the cover is the archetypal character that she has been assigned. But that doesn't necessarily mean that's who she is. And, you know, look, I've taken some flack. When it comes to misogynist covers, The Rook Volume 6, it features the Rook tied up. He's shirtless. And he is being menaced by these characters called the Furies who are in the story. It's kind of a James Bond kind of thing because there's a female character from each of the Axis powers. So there's an Italian girl, there's a Japanese girl. And, one of them is wearing nothing but a jacket. And it's a very much a bondage S&M sleaze kind of cover. And I can see why people are offended by that cover. You know, the artist in question, Ed Morania, who's very famous for doing pinup style covers, when I approached him, he said, you know, his favorite pulp covers were the sleaze ones. And, you know, we talked about it. And I wanted it to be something like with The Spirit, where Will Eisner would sometimes have The Spirit in that same kind of situation, being menaced by a femme fatale. And Ed, you know, wanted to kind of go a little bit further into the you know, the whole Nazi fetish sleaze kind of thing.
Right.
So we kind of met, I thought, somewhere in the middle. And some people love that cover, and other people really, really hate it. And, you know, I know there was a website that posted a thing about, you know, misogyny and new pulp, and they used that as one of their examples.
Yeah, I remember reading that.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I understand if you're judging it just by the cover, you know, but I did somewhat get offended, I guess, just by the implication that I was in any way a misogynist writer.
I think that article was really wrongheaded because I think they were just looking at the covers. I mean, they pointed to one of the Sentinels covers, and you know, Van Plesco writes really strong female characters in that series.
Yeah, you know, look, I understand. You know, you do, people do judge books by their cover. You know, and I hopefully, you know, that person in question will someday actually read the book and see that, you know, it's not like that necessarily. But I mean, you know, I can't pretend I'm some moral paragon when it comes to these kinds of things. You know, so everything you hear me say, take it with a grain of salt, I suppose. But I mean, I think the most important thing, I keep going back to it, is to just think of your female characters like the women you know. There's so many variations. I know if somebody were to sit down and say, well, men are like this, inevitably they would offend me. And I think, you know, if you start thinking, okay, well, women are like this, you need to stop because you're going to offend somebody, because not all.
Exactly. Going back to the whole sexuality thing, dealing with sex and female characters, that can also be a thorny issue. How do you approach that?
You know, I just try and if I'm writing a sex scene or writing about anything related to sex, I just try and think, you know, am I doing anything differently than I would do with a male character? That to me is important. I also, most of my female characters, there is an element of romance in the story, but I don't feel bad about that because I have elements of romance in my male hero stories as well.
Right.
I would, you know, if you're a writer, I would caution you to, you know, approach things in a similar fashion. You know, don't assume that because your character is a female character that stories have to in any way revolve around her boyfriend or her concern about, you know, maybe he likes somebody else or any of that kind of stuff, unless you're willing to do that with your male characters too. And, you know, when it comes to sex, you know, even in like the Rabbit Heart book, it was written, I had a lot of different POVs, but most of the book was kind of written from Fiona's point of view. And I think that's for some guys, I think that's a daunting task because, you know, they don't want to get the female mind wrong. But on the other hand, I think it's good for really getting across the fact that I'm not treating her just as a sex object because we're seeing the sex from her point of view. And, you know, look, women like sex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, women like sex. I think sometimes, you know, guys have this view that, you know, if you're going to have a really sexed up character, it's generally going to be a guy. And if you have a sexed up female character, she's a slut.
Yeah, there's like those, I'm glad you mentioned that because that was another thing I wanted to mention. It's those two dichotomies. There's the virgin or the slut. There's like nothing in between.
Right. And again, you know, you really have to just look at the world around you. Like I said, I know women who love hardcore porn, and the nastier the better, and they've only had two sexual partners in their whole life. Then I know women who've had a lot of sexual partners who are very much a prude when it comes to other aspects of sex. And the same with guys, you know? I mean, you've just got to approach it all that way. There's no one-size-fits-all female character or male. And so, you know, when I'm writing a sex scene with a female, I am conscious of the fact that I don't want to use her as a object or a toy. Mm-hmm. I have written, you know, nasty sex scenes with female characters. There was one in Rabbit Heart in particular where a female character was being very much used as something for the male character to get off in. But you know what? I addressed that in the scene. I addressed that, you know, from the girl's perspective. She wasn't stupid. She knew what was going on, but she also knew that emotionally there is some reason why she was letting this happen. Mm-hmm. I addressed that because, you know what, a lot of girls are broken and a lot of guys are broken, and it's okay. So I think you can. It's okay to do those things as long as you address them and you treat them with respect. Even when you're writing that nasty sex scene about somebody who's emotionally broken, you can treat that with respect, and I think your reader will respond to that.
I remember that scene now that you mention it, and yeah, you did a really good job of addressing that from the girl's point of view. Now, being a male writer, have you ever run into times where you've caught yourself kind of mansplaining things in your text when it comes to female characters?
To be honest, I can't think of any case. You know, probably, 5 minutes after we stopped recording, oh, I should have mentioned this. But offhand, not really. You know, I mean, I'm always conscious as I'm writing that, you know, I don't know necessarily who's going to read it. I mean, I think the majority of people who read my work are men, but I've met many women who've read it, read my stuff. You know, I never try and write for the audience, but I try and keep in mind that there is an audience and keep in mind that how people take what I write may be different based upon their viewpoints and their experiences and their familiarity with what I'm writing about and things like that. But I don't know if that's really answering the question or not.
Actually, that is. It was about if you've ever caught yourself doing that, and if you haven't, then that answers the question. Have you ever you're a married man? Have you ever consulted your wife about any of your female characters?
Not usually. You know, I mean, there have been. I know, you know, she read Rabbit Heart after the, mm-hmm. and she said, you know, she found it kind of creepy, because I mean. I think that, you know, she recognized some of the dialogue and some of the scenes and things like that from things that she knew about, or in some cases, maybe things that she said. Mm-hmm. And I think it was creepy from that standpoint more than the violence and the sex, because I know it's weird to read something and know you're in it.
Yeah.
Because you can't help but look around and think, wow, does everybody know I'm in that? You know, and of course they don't, but you know, you still feel like that. Mm-hmm. And there are times like in the end of The Damn Thing where I actually wrote two different endings and I let her read both and say, you know, I'm stuck. Which one do you like better? Things like that. But I usually don't ask her for a female point of view on anything. And it's mainly because I think I feel confident enough in my ability to create strong characters that honestly, I feel like I know what the character would do better than anybody else.
Right.
And so whether it's a male-female thing or not, I don't feel like I need to ask anybody else, what do you think somebody would do in this situation? Because I know what Samantha or Charity would do.
Yeah, okay, great. Before we get out of here, do you have any parting thoughts on writing female characters that you'd like to share with potential writers? Anything that we haven't touched on?
You know, I think we covered most of it, other than just to say, you know, don't be afraid of your female characters, you know. They should be no more difficult for you to write than writing a realistic male character. They're human beings. The fact that, you know, some of the internal workings and some of the exterior is different does not change the fact that there's just as much variety of women as there are of men. And, you know, just create a character. And if that character is a real character to you and it's believable to you, you can pass that on to the audience. And the audience isn't going to sit back, hopefully, and say, no woman would act that way. Because they can't. You can't say that. Now, having said that, you shouldn't ever get into a rut. You know, don't write all uber women. Have a variety. It's okay to have a stereotypically female character in there who cries at the drop of a hat and likes to go shopping and that kind of stuff. Mm. As long as there are elements to that character that maybe turn that on its head. You know, maybe have a character who cries at the drop of a hat, loves to go shopping, wears pink, and also happens to be a crack shot with a pistol.
Right.
You know, I think the audience actually responds to that very well because they see that the stereotypical things is almost a wink-wink, you know, kind of thing. So, I mean, I say just go have fun with it. Create good characters and don't worry if they're guys or girls.
That's great advice. So everybody get your cootie booster shots and jump right in.
Exactly.
So now, last time, you know, we got you to talk a little bit about upcoming stuff you've got coming out. This time, since this is dropping so close to the previous episode, I'd rather you talk a little bit about some of your favorite works featuring female characters.
Yeah, I would love to have everybody go and check out Rabbit Heart. There's a new edition coming from Pro Se. It might even be out by now. And, you know, still got that same beautiful Jason Levescu cover. And it's definitely different from my other work. So if you've read my other things, you know, don't go in expecting it to be like that. It's very different.
And it's got a really insightful introduction. Man, that guy's just a genius writer.
Well, you buy it for the introduction, if nothing else. but I think that's probably the best thing with a female character I've done. But then second, I would do Gravedigger. Gravedigger in many ways is me taking a lot of the things I wanted to do with Rabbit Heart and kind of grafting it back onto a more classic pulp PG-13 kind of framework. So if you were turned off by the R or X-rated nature of Rabbit Heart, Gravedigger might be a good thing for you. And it really, you know, I also really loved the damn thing. I thought Valet Cambridge was a fun character, a tough character, and it's my homage to the Maltese Falcon. So those are the three things that I would really push towards readers looking to see how I handle female characters.
And where should people go to find those?
They're available through all online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and so forth. And you can always keep up with me and in some cases actually buy copies of those books from me that I will personalize through my website, which is barryreese.net.
Okay, great. And we'll have links to all those on the website with the show notes, typewriter.percivalconstantine.com. So go ahead and check those out. Barry, thank you so much again for coming on the show. And thank you for not being the only guy out there in New Pulp, or, you know, not letting me be the only guy, I should say, in New Pulp who's writing female characters.
Well, you do it very, very well. It was, it's so interesting. If I ever hear you say that you find the Elisa Hill things to be kind of out of your comfort zone, because, I mean, you did it so well, I would have described that as exactly your comfort zone.
Well, it's like you said, you know, sometimes you may surprise yourself with what you find yourself gravitating towards. So yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun writing that, and there will be a new Myth Hunter story coming soon, I should plug. By the time this episode drops, it may be available. There's a story featuring Asami, Elisa Hill's changeling partner, from both Myth Hunter and Dragon Kings of the Orient, and she'll be appearing in the Pulpwork Christmas special.
Very cool.
Okay, so everybody, check that out, and check out all of Barry's fine works, especially Rabbit Heart. I cannot recommend that book enough. It's just amazing. It's wonderful work.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I get the most interesting reaction to that one. Who never made it past the first chapter. And then I have people who say that that's, you know, that they're quite honest in saying that's the only thing I've written that they liked.
Well, I've liked a lot of your stuff, but I love that. I could not put it down.
Definitely exciting to write. And it took me to a very dark place, though, which is one reason why I've never done the sequel.
Well, you got to jump back into the muck at some point and write that sequel, because I've been waiting for it for a while. Okay, Barry, thank you again for coming on, and hopefully we'll have you again sometime in the future.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you, and this has been The Exploding Typewriter, Pulp Writers on Writing Pulp. Have a good day.
This has been an episode of Exploding Typewriter, Pulp Writers on Writing Pulp. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be sent to typewriter@percivalconstantine.com. Join the conversation on Twitter @explodingtype or use the hashtag #newpulp. Visit typewriter.percivalconstantine.com for show notes and links where you can find more information about this episode's guest. The theme song for this show, Faster Does It, was created by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and is used under a Creative Commons license. If you enjoy the show, please support it by posting a review on iTunes and tell your friends.